live the life I want.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball Podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me on Twitter as always at redrock_bball. We are getting to the end of the season previews, and of course one team that we can't leave out any teams, but this is a team with a ton of fantasy implications. That is the Philadelphia 76ers. So to talk about the Sixers, I am joined by the host of the Locked On Sixers Podcast, and that is Keith Pompey. Keith, welcome back to the show.
Hey, man, thanks for having me on your show.
Good to have you back on. This is a Sixers team which, in the space of 12 months, has seen a pretty dramatic change in their trajectory. We've got two established stars on this team. Still lots of intrigue, lots of questions, and lots of things that we need to talk about with the Philadelphia 76ers. So let's start off by looking at the projected record. And Keith, I am absolutely stunned. You are one of the only Locked On hosts who have gone with the under from the Vegas win total with your projected record. You've gone with 50-32. The Vegas total is a very high 54.5. So I guess the question to you is, why are you a little bit lower on them than say other people may be in terms of the record? Or is it just, you know, perhaps there is a strengthening of some of those other teams around them that finished above them, with Boston, with Toronto and Kawhi Leonard and the returning guys in Boston, that might make it a little bit hard for them to achieve that goal of the 54 wins?
You know, it's a little bit of both. You know, I think that, you know, this offseason, you know, as much as it, I mean, the Sixers, you know, last year after the season, you know, everyone said that in order for them to take the next step, they had to go out there and get a third, like, superstar, so to speak. And Brett Brown even came out and said, we're going star hunting. Well, they weren't able to get a star. And if, you know, then another thing is, when you look at the 76ers, they finished the regular season with 16 straight wins. They went 20-3 in their final 23 games, you know, at the end of the season. And all that was because of Marco Bellinelli and Ersan Ilyasova. I mean, they went 20-3 after they signed Ersan Ilyasova. Neither one of those guys are on the team right now. Now, I know that they picked up Wilson Chandler, who I think is a great pickup for him. They also picked up Mike Muscala, you know, to be a backup, you know, big. But when you factor in that this team, you know, basically, I mean, lost their top two bench players who happened to be the difference, and that this team was unable to bring in a superstar, you know, I think that right then and there, you know, I think that they're going to have a little setback. And again, I'm not saying, you know, they won 50 games last year. I'm saying, they won 52. I'm saying 50. That's not a big setback, but I think that it's going to be harder for them to do that. And again, something that you said, you look at the Toronto Raptors, they're going to be very, very good. Boston Celtics are going to be arguably the second best team in the league behind Golden State. You look at the Indiana Pacers, who are going to be more improved. You look at the Washington Wizards, the Milwaukee Bucks. So I know a lot of people are saying, you know, the Sixers are going to dominate, but I think that they're going to be a solid team. I think they still may finish third in the East, but I think that they're going to have a hard time against teams that people think they're going to destroy.
I tend to agree with you there. There is those concerns with Bellinelli and Ilyasova, who were quite strong at the end of last season, but there are a few wild cards on this Sixers team that could make that, you know, a real non-issue. We have to wait and see how it is. But yeah, I don't think people should be expecting huge, massive steps forward for this team. It might be just another you know, strong, solid, developmental learning type year for this team. You have gone, Keith, with the projected leading scorer of Joel Embiid. I don't think that's a tough one. He averaged almost 23 points per game with 11 rebounds last season and played 63 games. When we did this podcast last season, we were talking about the status of Embiid's injury, and we were both really positive on it, thinking that there wasn't any issue with the foot. We were talking about ending of restrictions with minutes, ending of restrictions with back-to-backs, and of course that all happened in January last season. People are still going to have that concern with Embiid because of the first few seasons, but there is zero chance, in my opinion, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, Keith, that Embiid enters this season with any sort of strict minutes limit or back-to-back problems.
Hello, I lost you for a second, man.
I'll repeat the question, Keith. Basically, what I was saying is there is pretty much zero chance, again, correct me if I'm wrong, that Embiid enters this season with any sort of minutes or back-to-back games restriction.
Yeah, I mean, if so, man, I think Brett Brown will quit on the spot.
Yeah, probably.
I mean, this is the year that I think that we're going to see a different Joel Embiid. I mean, he's talking about his goal is to be the league MVP. And I think that he has a chance to do it. And the reason being is, like you said, this is a year that we're not going to see, minutes restrictions. We're not going to see back-to-backs. Also, this is the first summer that he was injury-free. You know what I mean? It's the first time that he's able to go out there and, like, train and work hard instead of just, like, rehabbing for injury. So, I think that we're going to see Joel Embiid, the megastar this season. I don't feel like I'm going out on a limb and saying that.
No.
It's just the fact that when you look at his injury history and you look at all this other stuff and this guy is finally healthy and he had 3 months to train, I think that we're going to see a lot. We're going to see this guy be a beast this year.
I agree with you. His rank on Yahoo at the moment is there's the 23rd ranked player. I think that he is a chance to be a first round guy this season. I've been in a few mock drafts where I've been picking around 11 and 12, and I've been getting Kawhi Leonard and Joel Embiid with my first two picks, and I'm pretty happy to get him in that area. We look at him and look, he played 63 games, which is obviously a marked improvement over the 31 from his rookie season. But I think what people fail to realize is the last 8 games of the season he missed was because Markelle Fultz ran into his face and broke it. Nothing to do with back injuries or foot injuries. It was a completely freak accident. If he plays in 7 of those games, 7 of those last 8 games where the Sixers were really pushing for that top seed, then we're talking about a guy that plays over 70 games. And I think that's a realistic expectation for Embiid this season. I think his playing time will push up a little bit as well. We might see him getting to 31 minutes a night. I think he is a strong second-round guy. And like you, Keith, I'm pretty confident with him with the injuries as we move forward. Hopefully it's the case because we all love Embiid on the court. He's super fun. He provides great numbers. He could be a 25-11 guy this season with 2 blocks. And I think there's a chance that his three-point percentage jumps back up after dipping quite considerably from his rookie season. But I'm big on Embiid, really interested to see that, and I'm not really scared off by past injuries with him at all. But there is an injured guy we need to talk about, Keith. That is the rookie DRC, Zaire Smith, who suffered that Jones fracture, which cost Ben Simmons his entire rookie season. What's the latest update on Zaire and when we're expecting him to be back?
I think the Sixers are going to take it slow on him. And even when he does come back, Zaire wasn't going to be a guy who, let's say, when they were tanking or when they were, when they were just trying to get guys out there, they want to take it slow with him. And also part of that was, he was going to spend some time in the G League.
Yep.
So whenever Zaire comes back, he may get some minutes, but even if he was healthy, he was going to be, the 9th man, 10th man off the bench. Because they're looking at him as if, we're building for the future. He has a huge upside, but we know he's not ready now. So, his injury, it typically takes a couple months. In the past, the 76ers were like, hey, let's just shut this guy down for the first year and bring him back the second in year two. But this one is different. You know what I mean? I feel like they feel like it's going to be now again. With them being extremely cautious, let's just say it's a three month injury. Well, they're going to keep going back to the doctor like they did with Ben Simmons, and if they feel like that the thing isn't 100%, totally 150%, the Sixers are still going to shut them down until that, because they look at him as, I don't want to call him an asset, but they look at him as a guy, like I said, someone for the future. They don't need him right now, and it's just one of those things where they just want to come along, and when he's ready to play.
Everyone knows what I think of Zaire from a dynasty point of view. I think he's got the potential to be a star, not saying he's a likely chance of getting there, but he's a potential to be a really high guy who can, you know, defend well, who can handle the ball a bit. He struggled a bit in his summer league, but I thought he showed enough athletically, especially defensively, looked really good, blocking shots, getting steals. He can rebound. I think he can get some passing. And if that shot develops, he is a real star upside type of guy. But Keith, I agree with you. He's just not going to be part of the rotation. They'll just put Furkan Korkmaz in there. They might see a little bit of Landry Shamet or Shake Milton in that shooting role. There's just no need for him to be a big part of this rotation for this season. And yeah, adding the injury on, we're just not going to see much of Zaire. So I don't think there's very, very little to see with him for this coming season. But long term, I think his dynasty value actually drops a bit in other people's eyes because of this injury. And you should use that to your advantage in terms of being able to acquire him, because I do think that there is pretty significant upside in what Smith is able to do. But the guy, Keith, probably across the entire NBA that everybody wants to know or is very interested to see is the guy you've got listed as a potential breakout player, and that is Markelle Fultz. We know the story, well, actually, we know a version of the story because I don't think anyone's going to truly know what actually went on with Fultz last season, at least publicly. He only played 18 minutes per night and averaged 7 points, but 4 assists, 3 rebounds, a steal, the youngest player ever to have a triple-double as well, and started to show when he came back from that shoulder complaint, he showed Keith that he can get to anywhere on the court whenever he wants. It's just a matter of those shots going in, and he is a guy that does project as a top 50, top 40, maybe even higher type upside guy at some point. But the question we want to know is, Keith, is he going to be ready to play a considerable role? Does he jump ahead of TJ McConnell in the rotation? Will he start eating into some of J.J. Redick's time as well?
I don't think he'll eat into J.J. Redick's time. I think he'll jump ahead of T.J. McConnell. I think that's the expectation. You know, like right now, everything's early. But, you know, when you factor in that he's the first overall pick and you factor in that, you know, T.J., even though T.J. is a solid player, I think he's I like T.J. a lot for, you know, for what he can do and what he brings to the team. But when you look at Markelle Fultz and you look at, you know, justifying that, hey, I gave up a pick and we traded another pick to move up to get him, you know. So I think that the Sixers are going to have to play him. Now, again, as far as how he'll, like the way he'll do, that's like to be decided. I mean, I think Markelle is going to be a flyer for some teams, like, you know, a guy that you would draft possibly, and you say, okay, I'm drafting him. Like, he may not be my target. He may not be the first guy to get that position, but I'm going to get him just in case. Because if he's going to be good, if he plays, I feel like Markelle's going to play at a high level, you know, if everything is right mentally. You know, I think that just right now, I know he's been this summer working out with Drew Hanlon. You know, that was all out in L.A. and this and that. And it was in a private setting. But, you know, we really won't know how much his shot has improved until, you know, he gets in front of 20,000 people, you know, screaming for him or screaming against him. And then that's when we'll see, you know, if Markelle is ready or not. You know, other than that, it's kind of hard to speak on it because it's really a wild card. But if I'm the 76ers, you know, and if he's good enough to just throw out there, you know, you have to give him quality minutes just to justify the pick.
He showed enough last season for me to be really intrigued. Not that I wasn't intrigued before, but the return, the shot wasn't there. He didn't attempt a three-pointer. I think he will take some threes. I think he will show a lot more. I am 100% confident that he's going to shoot higher than 50% from the free throw line, which is what he did last season. So I think that he'll be able to improve there. Now, for some reason, Yahoo's got him ranked fairly high, 99th, for a guy that, you know, was, you know, missing in action last season. I think he can be a top 150, maybe top 100 guy, but I wouldn't be willing to spend pick 99 on him. He's one of those late round picks, and let's just see, because, you know, while we can have every belief in the level of talent, it's getting enough minutes there, and we're talking about a solid starting five already. So he comes in as a sixth man. Is it a 25 minute sixth man? Is it a 29 minute sixth man? Where does McConnell fall? Where does Chandler fall in that? And there's an element of risk there, but he's perfect as a late round. But at 99, I'm not sure I'd be looking at that. His ADP is actually lower, so people are, you know, pushing back on that ranking at 113. I think he's probably okay at that area, but he is, I reckon, probably the most intriguing guy to see this season outside of the rookie class who we haven't seen. seeing what Fultz can do this season is going to be massively interesting. And if that shot is anywhere even close to average, then you've got a real star type guy that could be that extra piece to unlocking a Sixers championship in coming seasons. The two-way guys on this team, Keith, Shake Milton and Demetrius Jackson. Jackson has some NBA experience. Milton was a second-round pick. It seems unlikely that those guys will get huge amounts of time. Milton, a second-round draft choice this season. Do the Sixers show any indication of having more interest in one of those guys than the other?
No, not right now. Not at all. I mean, I'm pretty sure both of them in the preseason, I expect them, to play, especially when the team goes to China to get some quality minutes there, just because, because they know that they probably won't play a lot in the season. And unfortunately for both of them, Shake, he was a guy who was a two guard coming up, and then he played point at SMU, so he's a combo. So if he can develop a shot, show people that he can shoot, then there could possibly be a chance for him to get, some minutes. The problem with Demetrius is that, you have Ben Simmons, you have Markel, and you have TJ McConnell. So, I see him, at the games, but I don't see him getting a lot of play at all.
Shake Milton actually shot 43% from three last season. So if that can translate to any degree, that's going to be useful. But yeah, we're barely going to see these guys really on the court. Any real changes to how this team is looking to attack the season, coaching-wise or style-wise, pace-wise? Any major changes that you can see coming? Because it's not like the personnel has changed massively. Wilson Chandler comes and he sort of fits in. It feels like, to me, it's going to be a lot more of the same from this Sixers team.
You're exactly right. It's going to be a lot more of the same. I mean, Brett Brown's philosophy is pace and space and defense. You know what I mean? He wants to play at a high pace. He wants to space the floor, and he wants to get after it on D. The big difference is that Lloyd Pierce is no longer, running their defense. Now he's the head coach of the Atlanta Hawks. But when you look at the type of players that they have, it's still the same core. Like you said, Shake, I don't see him getting a lot of time, a lot of minutes, but he shot above 40% from three. Shamet, they drafted him. He can shoot the three. Landry Shamet. So, it's going to be one of those things. It's going to be just like it was last year.
Yeah, exactly. And that's useful for us fantasy owners to be able to have a level of consistency in how these guys are going to play. The guy you listed as the player most likely to be traded is Jared Bayless. I don't think anyone can have any argument with that. We heard some rumors at times about him potentially being moved in a Kyle Korver deal, that nothing like that's happened at this point. He's still got 1 year left at $9 million, and it's not going to be part of the rotation really at all. So I don't really think we need to talk about Jared Bayless too much. We've spoken about the draft picks, but let's get into the meat of this team, Keith, and talk about the projected starting five. We've already spoken about Joel Embiid, but let's talk about the rookie of the year, Ben Simmons, who was obviously excellent last season, the 27th ranked player in fantasy, averaging 16, 8, and 8 with almost a block, 1.7 steals, 55 and 56 from the field and from the line. Of course, the things that will last in people's mind are the one-point game in the playoffs, the struggles there, but he was an absolute beast in the regular season and the first round of the playoffs, and I think he takes another step forward. I guess the one question I want to start with you with Simmons, Keith, is that that free throw percentage, which was bad last season, the second worst free throw percentage impact guy in fantasy behind Dwight Howard because of the volume. But we saw at the end of the year, he was hitting 70% in the playoffs. That's the sort of number that he was doing at LSU. So do you think that he can keep that going? And has he worked out that issue that was plaguing him through the early parts of the season?
Yeah, I think he can keep that going. I mean, it's funny. Like, I think Ben Simmons could be as good as he wants, and I think that he wants to be great. I think the problem with Ben Simmons, you could say from the foul line anywhere else, but to the point is, and I'm not taking any shots at him, but sometimes people are so good that they can get by without putting the work in. You know what I mean? And I think that 1 point game, the embarrassment that he had, was, one of those things where he knows that he has to get better. Now, this is something else. We talk about free throw shooting at the end of the season. You remember earlier in the season when they were doing hack event, right? And Simmons knew that in the latter part of the season and in the playoffs, that teams would do that to him. So what happens? He puts in the work and he's shooting 70% at the latter stages of the season. So, you know what I mean? I think that he's only going to get better. And I think that, you know, he's going to have a solid year this season. You know, his shooting is going to go up. Now, again, his 3-point shooting, that's not just going to go, and it's not like this flipping the switch. But I think that, you know, he's going to attempt more. And I think that, you know, we're going to see some progress this season.
I'm glad you said that because I believe that. And so much of what you said is true. He was that dominant as a junior that he could just get to the rim anywhere, anytime that he wanted. And when he got into the NBA, he was able to get to the rim anytime that he wanted. So he didn't need to use that 3-point shot, which I believe he does have some ability to hit. Now, in the playoffs, that was a concern. You talked about him working on the free throws with the hacker and started improving that in the playoffs and down the stretch of the season, which I think will be able to improve. Now, he took 11 threes last season, but all of them were end of the quarter heaves. Do you think that he actually goes out and attempts a pick and pop or a catch and shoot type three this season? Will we see him at least attempt one of them this season?
I think we will. I think we will. I think that it is not going to be as soon as 76 in fantasy. But, you know, I see it happening. I think, you know, here's the thing about Ben Simmons and with three. Like, you would go to practice and you would go like pre-game sometimes and you see him work out. He would make like 3 out of 5.
Yep.
Right? I mean, it was like, but it just got to a point where, you know, I guess like the two he missed, like the one that he would miss would always like go off the side of his hand and the other one would rim out. So it got to a point where he just didn't want to do it. You know what I mean? He just didn't, like, I guess he was thinking about the one that went off the side of his hand. So, you know, with his working out this summer and working on that, you know, you feel that those that repetition gives you more confidence. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree.
Seems are going to sag and he'll be okay.
I have, this it jives with things that I've heard about Simmons. I know people that are close to the Simmons camp who have said this, like, he can shoot it. He just chooses not to because he's not, and he's a guy that, well, I wouldn't necessarily say perfectionist, but it's pretty close to it. It's like, if I want to do something, I want to do it better than anybody else. And I know that my 3-point shooting isn't better than anybody else. So let me do everything else that I am better than everybody else at. And that is, you know, driving it and finding guys and dishing and cutting and being bigger and stronger at my position. So that's what he focuses on. Of course, he is going to start to develop that. I think he actually will hit a three this season. I'm not saying he's going to be knocking down over one per game because that's unrealistic, but I think he will hit some and he will show an improvement. I think he is a pretty strong second round guy, but in terms of especially roto leagues, you have to have that confidence that the free throw percentage is going to come up. He is going to lack threes. I'm not worried about the lacking of threes. You can find threes anywhere off the waiver wire. Go get Wayne Ellington to give you 2.5 threes per game. You can find that in other spots. It's more that in the roto league, the free throw percentage could be a concern, but the other numbers are going to be massive for Simmons. He's going to take on probably even a larger role this year, and I think most of his numbers are going to go up, and he is a strong second round guy, especially in head-to-head leagues. Now, the guy starting next to him, Keith, we've got JJ Redick, who put up, you know, really strong numbers last season, played a lot more than we'd seen in the past, 30 minutes per game, 17 points, almost 3 triples in true JJ Redick style. Doesn't do too much else, but he did have 3 assists per game, moved the ball a bit more. The percentages are always elite with JJ, but he is 34 years of age now. Do you think that he takes any sort of a step back from the over 30 minutes a game he played last season, especially if we've got a healthy and reliable Markelle Fultz around?
Well, yeah, if you know, with this team, I could see him probably taking a little step back. But I also think even though he's taking a step back, I expect him to play at the same level, if not better. And the reason I'm saying this is because I believe that, you know, let's face it, before that, Joel Embiid didn't play in all the games. And Joel Embiid was kind of sort of in the minute restriction in some of the games he played. I think the fact that Joel Embiid is going to be in the best shape of his life and that he's going to dominate, I feel as if that's going to open things up for J.J. Redick. And I feel like that J.J. Redick is going to, you know, be the second leading scorer on the team. And I feel like he's going to have one of the best years of his career. Last year was arguably his best year. I feel like this year will be just like last season.
We could very easily see that, just with it. Maybe a little bit in terms of playing time, a little bit lower. But he is an interesting guy. Obviously, I talk about being able to find threes. Like, Redick's one of those guys where you can find those threes and providing really strong percentages as well. He is probably being a little bit overranked as the 72nd ranked player on Yahoo. He was 76 last year. So that's, assuming exactly the same level of production, which, again, if he loses a minute, 2 minutes, and those numbers could drop. So I wouldn't be looking at him there, but if he does fall, I'm more than happy to take him. The next member of the starting five, Keith, is Robert Covington, who had his struggles in the playoffs as well, but was the 44th ranked player last season in fantasy because he blocks shots, he gets steals, he hits threes. His rebounding did suffer playing a full season next to Joel Embiid, but still, those numbers are pretty strong. He's a top 50-ish type of guy, and I think he remains the same this season. Who would you think, say Fultz does step up and looks like this number one draft pick prospect, do you think that Redick or Covington is more at risk, or Dario Saric, who is more at risk of losing those minutes to accommodate more Fultz out of those three guys?
It would be probably Dario Saric, because if you think back to last year, the starting lineup was Markel, Ben, Redick, Cove at the four, Robert Covington at the four, and Embiid at the five. So I think that would be Dario Saric to take the hit.
Yeah, that's how I see it as well. And while sort of waiting all of last season to see Saric, when Fultz comes back, he's going to lose some minutes, and Fultz is never end up coming back. But I think that's probably the right way to look at it. I think Covington is going to be solid in those 30, 31 minutes per night and just do what he does. Get steals in high volume, have really cold streaks with shooting, have really hot streaks with shooting, and you're going to have to deal with that. He's a guy you probably have to punt field goal percentage with, but just realize he's going to get those other numbers and get them pretty consistently, the defensive stuff. But the percentages and the points are going to be low. So it does depend on how you build your fantasy team with Covington, but just know that those numbers that he provides, it should be fairly similar. But let's talk Saric, who always seems to be a candidate to be overdrafted. He was the 73rd ranked player last year in 30 minutes per game. Had a really good season and improved his shooting significantly. I wasn't sure he could become a close to 40% three-point shooter. But now, on the back of last season, Yahoo said, well, now we think he's the 57th best player. And to me, that is nonsense. I agree with you that he is the guy most likely to lose a minute or two to Fultz, even lose some touches there. And I'm not fully convinced that he is a 40% shooter. Now, he was excellent for this team. I wasn't sure how it was going to work out with him, Simmons, and Embiid in that starting lineup. But, is there any hope for Saric to actually improve this season? Because I'm not certain I see it.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about Dario, I like Dario's game a lot. He's excellent. He can, he can shoot. He can, do a lot of things. But, you raise a great point because, if you're looking at the 76ers and, you want Dario Saric to be your fourth leading scorer on the team.
Yep.
And with that is, he's a glue guy, but at the same time, if he's your fourth leading scorer and if Markel is basically going to come in and start and take his spot, it's just going to be hard for him to be extremely successful, in fantasy basketball. Now, I'm not knocking him, but I just feel like, on a team when he's the fourth option, it's just kind of hard for him to excel in fantasy.
The thing that's very interesting with Saric that I think is definitely getting missed by the people who are drafting him in the top 60 is the fact that the post All-Star break period last season, he was ranked outside the top 100 and played only 27 minutes per game. And that's without Fultz there for all of that playing time. So there is a realistic chance that he goes back into a 27 minute per night role that was with Ilyasova there. And of course, Ilyasova is not there anymore, but Wilson Chandler comes in and fills into that role with Fultz taking Bellinelli and Chandler taking Ilyasova. So there's a realistic chance that Saric is a significant bust at that pick number 60. If he holds up those numbers that he was putting up post All-Star, he will be, because that's outside the top 100. But the more important number there is the 27 minutes per game. And while I don't necessarily think he'll be 27 minutes per game this season, it's a realistic chance that he does lose that amount of playing time from last season.
I agree 100%.
So let's see exactly how that works out. Now, I think there's value still on this Sixers team for fans. I think Simmons and Embiid are both ranked outside the top 20, and I feel pretty good about them being inside the top 20. So there's some value there. While I think, as I mentioned, Šarić and Redick at 57 and 72 are probably, and not probably, definitely too high. And even Fultz at 99 is probably a little bit high in terms of where he should be ranked for fantasy purposes. TJ McConnell, Keith, had some success when they moved him in as a starter in the playoffs, but we've already touched on the fact that he probably gets shuffled down a little bit over with Fultz hopefully getting that role, but he outplayed Fultz in the playoffs, so is there any hope of us seeing TJ maybe step it up like he did in the playoffs, or was that just a real matchup-based scenario?
Nah, that was TJ. You know, I mean, TJ just plays with a lot of grit, and if you look at it in regards to, like, you know, points per minute. Like, you know, he was, you know, through the first two rounds of the playoffs, either he was like, you know, number one or number two in the NBA. I mean, you know, it's just how he is. It's how he played. You know, I think if Markelle Fultz, you know, does not, you know, play at a high level, I think TJ McConnell is going to have another solid year. You know, he's also a guy who can, if the Sixers want to go smaller, you know, sometimes they play Ben at power forward. You know, TJ McConnell comes in and he runs it. You know, he runs the show. And he is, and you know, he also is an improved three-point shooter. So sometimes he can go to the corner and Ben, like, will find him for threes. So, you know, TJ McConnell is a solid player. But like you said, a lot of this is contingent on what Markelle Fultz does.
Wilson Chandler comes across in a trade from the Nuggets. He struggled a little bit last season. He's going to have a much lower role this season. There's no reason to look at him as a standard league guy. He might play 26 minutes a night, but he's a guy that probably needs 35 minutes a night to really be pushing the top 100. So I don't think we're going to see much out of Wilson Chandler. He'll be solid. He'll provide the value. But what I really want to talk about here is, Keith, the backup center role if Embiid does miss time. They brought in the Moose, Mike Muscala. They signed Jonah Bolden, a second-round draft pick from the year before, and Amir Johnson is still around. Who do you think is that primary backup center? Is it Amir, who started pretty much every game when Embiid missing last season, or is it someone like Muscala who can, you know, at least provide a level of spacing that Amir doesn't?
You know, I think that it will probably be Amir. And the reason why I'm saying that is because a lot of times with Amir, they like for Amir to be a guy that, you know, set picks, and he basically frees up things for Ben Simmons and for the other guards, JJ Redick. But when you look at Mike Muscala, I see him playing a lot like an Ersan Ilyasova role, you know, where, you know, he plays small ball center. But at the same time, you know, he comes in as Dario Saric's backup and gets a lot of quality minutes there. But in regards to this backup center, you know, I'm looking at Amir Johnson.
Jonah Bolden, the last player I want to talk about here, Keith. First year, Summer League, really impressive. This year, not so much. Do you think he plays more time with the G League or with the big club?
I think initially we'll see him get a lot of minutes with the G League, you know, just to get, you know, more acclimated to it. Now, again, I know that sounds crazy because, you know, he's been playing ball for a while and especially playing professionally the last 2 years overseas. But, you know, I'm looking at it as if a guy who just needs to settle down and he needs to, like, find what his role is going to be. So I think that he'll be down there in the G League. But, you know, at certain stints, especially like when they go on these long road trips, you know, they want him to make sure he's going to get valuable minutes. But, you know, the latter part of the season, you know, I expect to see him more with the, you know, with the 76ers.
He's got great fantasy intrigue with his ability to block shots and get steals. His rebounding rate's not great, and it's all going to come down to the shot for Bolden. If he's a 30% three-point shooter, he probably struggles to see the floor through his career. If he can get it to 36, 37, then he becomes a real massive weapon who could, you know, whether it's on this team or on another team, you develop into a sneaky top 150 guy, but it's unlikely to happen this season. Keith, thank you for coming on and talking to us about the Philadelphia 76ers. You guys can check out Locked On Sixers with Keith. And where else can they check out your work, Keith?
They can check it out on philly.com.
So go and check out.
Follow me on Twitter.
Go. Yep. What's your Twitter handle?
Pompey on Sixers.
Go check out Keith on Twitter. Check him out, philly.com. And, of course, Locked on Sixers. Subscribe to this podcast and Locked on Sixers. Apple Podcasts, Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spotify, and this show's also on YouTube. Give us a 5-star rating. Give us a thumbs up. Leave a comment. You know the drill. Keith, thank you once again for coming on.
Thanks for having me, man.
Guys, we are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Wilson Chandler.